shattering this, as it is my great pleasure most every Friday, to welcome the foremost expert in the world on the religion of Islam, its most effective opponent, I.Q. al-Rasuli, who is the author of a series of books called The True Faces of Islam. It's Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Islam, of Muhammad and Allah. He is the gentleman who actually conceived and has conveyed the equation that unlocks the nature of Islam. Just as Einstein came to the conclusion that energy and matter are the same thing, but just different amounts of the same thing. They're equivalent, except for amount. E equals mc squared. I.Q. al-Rasuli is the individual who came up with the formula that defines Islam. It was born as a criminal enterprise. It remains a criminal enterprise. If you want to understand its every motive, its every deed, view it as a criminal enterprise. And when you do so, you will understand who Muslims are and what they do. As a result of that, IQ, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the program. I want to talk to you about an individual who recently blew himself to bits, and he's an Australian. He did so in Syria. Are you familiar with the teenage fashion model from Australia who had a blog and decided that he would join the Islamic State for the express purpose of a suicide mission?
Yes, I know about it.
Yeah. I did my first hour yesterday on that very topic. And I said, you know, can you imagine, and this is just hard for me to fathom, how anybody looking at the behavior of the Islamic State would view that as godly and good and would want to sacrifice their life on behalf of it. I mean, can you list some of the Islamic behaviors that the Islamic State is engaged in?
Yes, mass murder, pillage, rape, plunder, destruction of monuments of 3,000 years old, dealing with drugs, sex slaves, I mean, you name it, they're doing it.
Yeah. I would say that the single worst behaviors of the Islamic State actually is not mass murder. But they do a lot of that. And their mass murder, by the way, is not clinical. They slowly saw off a person's neck as they drown in their own blood. I would say the single worst thing that they do is not that they burn people alive in their homes, which they do routinely. Yeah, I don't think it's the slave trade, which they do routinely, is the worst thing that they engage in. Recruiting and then training children, some as young as 7 or 8 years old, to be jihadists and to plunder for them is not the worst thing that they do. Stealing, which is their primary means of financing themselves, I don't even think that's the worst thing they do. Personally, I think the worst thing they do is pedophilia. Where they kidnap very young girls, sometimes as young as 6, 7, 8 years old, and they sell them off as sex slaves after they have gang raped them.
Yes, they do that with boys also.
Yeah, they do. There's a lot of homosexuality amongst Muslims. They're very confused about sexuality because sexuality in Islam is about control and conquest. It is never about love. So there is a lot of confusion in the Muslim mind. All right, so we have the behaviors of the Islamic State. How is it that anybody in their right mind would say, you know, I'm going to leave Australia because, you know, there is none of that. There's no rape, no, I mean, de minimis pedophilia that's not celebrated, certainly. Very little mass murder. You know, people aren't decapitated and sold as sex slaves. None of that's taking place here in Australia. So I want to go to a place and die for a group of people that are promoting and celebrating that perverted behavior. How do you get there?
Irrationality. Total irrationality.
Right.
Literally.
Which is the consequence of religion. It does that to people.
Well, especially Islamic. Yeah. I mean, especially Islamic. Of all the other religions.
Yeah.
Other religions don't incite their followers to murder other people who don't believe as they do.
Right.
Not a single one that I know.
Yahweh etched the 10 statements in stone. Islam and Muhammad violated all all ten.
All of them.
So if you look at Yahweh's statement that go down the list where he talks about things, don't covet, don't steal, don't make a habit of murder, don't bear false witness. You go down Yahweh's laundry list of things you ought not do and ought not make a practice of doing. Those would be, for any moral person, that's a pretty good standard. But Muhammad made a practice of killing, made a practice of stealing, made a religion out of stealing. That's why it's a criminal enterprise. His entire testimony is false witness. And
this
is why
the Quran is not godly. This is why the Quran, we keep repeating to anybody listening, has nothing to do with God. Allah is not God. Allah is definitely not the same as the God of the Bible, because Allah is Muhammad.
Right. Who claimed to be demon-possessed. But I think there's a connection here, IQ. The fact that Yahweh etched 10 statements in stone about how one should live, how one should relate to him, what one should say and do, and what one should not say and do. And Islam literally inverted those. So everything that Yahweh said is good, Islam says is bad. Everything that Yahweh says is bad, Islam says is good and celebrates it. Celebrates killing, for example. Celebrates lying, as another example. And one of the Quran surahs says that Muslims are to lie. And another one says that stealing is lawful and good. And other ones say, go off and kill them all. And so if your religion takes what's good and makes it bad, and takes what's bad and makes it good, that's exactly how this boy decided that Australia, which is essentially good, was to be hated, and the Islamic State, which is vile, should be respected.
You know, last time on Friday, Scott asked a simple question about the Somalis in Minnesota.
Yes.
Why they come all the way to America for freedom, and then they want to bring Sharia.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most relevant question, literally.
All right.
Because answering it is going to be very difficult for people who are decent human beings, like in Americans or Europeans.
Right.
These people have no understanding of freedom. No. None whatsoever.
What is Islam?
The Quran forbids them to be free, because Allah says, you are my slaves.
Right. What is Islam?
Every Khalifa, by the way, every Khalifa, including Muhammad, he said he was the slave of Allah.
Right.
Well, if somebody is a slave, you cannot love your master. That is why in the whole of the Quran, the word love does not appear anywhere. Nowhere in the Quran and nowhere in the Hadith between Allah and his followers. Or between his followers and any other human being. None.
What does Islam mean? What does Islam mean in Arabic?
Submission.
Yeah, submission.
That's it.
Slavery. You know, we go back to the first statement that Yahweh etched in stone. He says, I am Yahweh, your God. I freed you from slavery. Yahweh's whole approach is, I don't want you to be a slave to human institutions, particularly religious and political institutions. I want you to be free. I want to liberate you. I'm in the business of freeing you. What is Allah in the business of?
Look, Islam is a cauldron filled with bile, rage, misogyny, supremacism, intolerance, lust, envy, delusion, conspiracy theories, authoritarianism, infallibility, you name it. Islam's dream of world domination, this imperial village, is the very essence of Islam.
Right. You know, when Muhammad created the first day of the Islamic era, when he was thrown out of Mecca in shame for the satanic verses, when he claims that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan, which is true, by the way. Not very many things that Muhammad said are true, but that happens to be one of them. And they met at Aqaba, and they made a pledge. Was the essence of the pledge, Muhammad said, just like those who would have fought for Genghis Khan, that if you go and fight for me, you get to keep 80% of what you steal. I get 20% for being the ringleader of this organized crime family. But you get to keep 80% of what you steal. And you can go kill anybody you want to go kill. You can rape the women. You can enslave the children. And if you get killed killing for me, then you ought to know that I've got a remedy for that, too. I'm going to promise you multiple virgins and rivers that flow with wine in what sounds to me like a whorehouse.
It is a whorehouse. It's Muhammad's whorehouse version of paradise. And those people you're talking about, whether they're Westerners or Easterners, young people educated in universities, fall for this crap. There is no logic in there. There's none whatsoever.
No.
Islam, the Quran, the minute the virus of the Quran goes into the brain of any human being, believe it or not, instantly it erases the areas of the brain dealing with logic. Completely. And in a few days, it erases the areas dealing with compassion and mercy, turning the victim
yes.
into a zombie, a killing machine. Literally, yes. that's what they are, a killing machine.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, it turns the victim into a killing machine. And it's all based on the criminality of Muhammad. Muhammad didn't want to work, was incapable of adding value to society. So he created, just as Genghis Khan, he created a scheme where people would go rob for him, and he was the beneficiary of their robbery.
But
nothing more to Islam than that.
Yeah, but there is a huge difference, as we discussed it before, between Genghis
yes.
Khan and Muhammad.
That's
Genghis
true.
Khan was a proud and a military leader. Muhammad was a coward.
Correct.
A pure coward.
Yeah.
At the battle, not at Badr, the next battle,
mm-hmm.
he was a coward. He asked his subordinates to die for him. He didn't lift
yes.
a finger. They were dying for him, and he was promising them al-Jannah. That means
yeah.
paradise.
Right.
So
oh, yeah,
he
would always put on two coats of mail. He never lifted a
Absolutely.
Sword. There's no time that Muhammad actually inflicted a blow, and he was always hiding behind others. He would only gloat over those that his followers had killed as he was mutilating dead bodies. Yeah, he was a scumbag and an absolute coward. Well, Genghis Khan is no saint. The fact is that Genghis Khan did fight and opposing armies, and he battled armies Muhammad never did. That's coming to you. It's so instructive. You said that Muhammad was a coward, and if you read about Muhammad's raids. His 75 terrorist raids. He either sent his mujahideen, his holy warriors, his jihadists off to plunder a group of people, with him staying at home, or he would always be in the back, covered with multiple layers of protection and surrounded by people who he told to die for them if there was ever a charge on him. And in addition, he never once engaged with a foe that could strike back. Ever.
Not once in all his life, literally.
Yeah. He was a scumbag terrorist because if you attack defenseless women and children, you don't have to be skilled. And they can't defend themselves.
But that's exactly what everyone in the Muslim world today are doing. What do the Shabab do? They attack
yes.
civilians. Boko
right.
Haram, civilians. Hamas,
right.
civilian. Hezbollah, civilian. All of them
yes.
attack civilians. They attack airplanes, trains, cars. But when they confront in a military confrontation, they are defeated.
Correct.
Twice Pakistan, the Muslim state, went against India.
Right.
Twice it was clobbered. The
right.
Arabs, five times, six times, seven times, they went against Israel. Israel is a nothing state, nothing in size. 8,000 square miles with 5 million people. And the Muslims are 400 million people over 5 million square miles. And they're gloating.
All right. And they got
what
clobbered every time they
got clobbered.
A Muslim is in. There is no Muslim nation no Muslim military that has ever been shown capable of defeating an actual army from another country. Even when the Crusaders engaged, they were civilians. It wasn't a, you know, France didn't send an army. England didn't send an army. Spain didn't send an army. These were just individuals who wanted to go off on a gala religious excursion. No, there isn't a history of Muslims creating military hardware and perfecting the art, if you want to call it that, to go against a formidable foe. No, they have always, as cowards, attacked civilians. In fact, this young man, who left Australia to specifically become a suicide bomber, he said, "I am preparing to sacrifice my life for Islam in Ramadi." Who did he kill?
A very stupid man.
Who did he kill?
Civilians.
The civilians, absolutely. And he justified his going to kill civilians, Muslims, by the way, based upon the fact that America had killed Muslims in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So he said, the smart thing, the noble, the moral thing, the religious thing for me to do is go kill more Muslims. I used the example yesterday. I said, this is like America saying, you know, the Japanese killed some Hawaiians when they bombed Pearl Harbor. So we should really show those Japanese we're not going to tolerate this by going and blowing ourselves up amongst Hawaiian civilians in a marketplace. That'll really show the Japanese.
Of course.
That's how stupid this is. The parallel is identical.
Yes. But again and again we come to the same conclusion. They're totally irrational.
How can you be this stupid? You know, this kid, too, he talked about that, you know, he studied Islam, and he chose Islam over other religions because of its accuracy scientifically and historically and the great moral fabric that ran through the Quran.
Well,
how could you be
that stupid? I don't know which Quran he read, but it couldn't have been the Quran that you and I are reading.
Oh, of course not. I mean, the Quran not only doesn't have a single prophecy that came true as predicted, and Yahweh said, you want to know if I inspired it as God? You look for prophecy. And if there is no prophecy, it didn't come from me. And if there's one error in any detail in any prediction, it didn't come from me. And you ought to kill that person who pretended to be speaking on my behalf because they're really deadly. And the Quran doesn't have a single prophecy that came through as predicted, not one. But the Quran couldn't even get history right. The Quran has Alexander the Great as a Muslim.
Of course, yes.
And you know, where does the Quran say that Alexander the Great went to recruit fellow Muslims?
Yes,
the muddy spring.
Where the sun was setting in a murky puddle of water.
Yeah, somewhere out there off of the earth, the extraterrestrial Muslims, where the sun goes to bed at night in a muddy puddle of water. The guy was a complete nincompoop. Muslims, wake up. Muhammad not even able to get history right, nor his wannabe God. Do you recall what the Quran says was the form of torture that was going to be inflicted in Egypt when Moshe was before Pharaoh? What was the form of execution that the Quran says was going to be deployed?
If I remember correctly, it was crucifixion.
Yes. You know when crucifixion was invented?
Yes, much later.
A thousand years later.
Yes.
A thousand years later.
Correct.
The Egyptians never engaged in crucifixion.
No, crucifixion didn't even
exist. It was actually invented first by the Assyrians in about 400 to 500 BCE, a thousand years after this event took place.
Correct.
they can't even get history right. The Quran repeatedly talks about two people that had major cities and these great monuments that Allah terrorized and put to shame. And so it's always the threat to the Quraiza, Muhammad's tribe, that you either acquiesce to what I'm saying and you follow me, you surrender to me, or my God is going to destroy you just like he did these two massive civilizations that were in Arabia. Has any trace of either of them ever been found?
No, they never existed.
There you go.
Only Muhammad invented them. And the people who were listening to him, of course, were illiterate, mm-hmm. very gullible, and very superstitious. And that's why he got away with murder. But tragedy is, he's getting away with murder, has been getting away with murder for 1,400 years.
Yeah. The Quran claims to confirm the Torah. I've read the Torah. Studied the Torah. And I've read the Quran. I've studied the Quran. They are the opposite of one another. Do opposites affirm?
Impossible.
All right. Muhammad claims that the Quran was delivered in pure Arabic. Isn't the Arabic alphabet actually Hebrew? And isn't almost every important word in the Quran a Hebrew word, including the word for Quran itself, which is from Kara?
Yes.
Hebrew? Everything. Including even the title God. Everything in the Quran that is an important concept is Hebrew. It's not Arabic.
Correct.
Did written Arabic even exist at the time that Muhammad allegedly revealed this Quran?
There was no Arabic language written.
No.
Not at the time of Muhammad.
No. It was provided by Assyrians as an evolution of Hebrew and Aramaic.
Yes, but these were Christians, not Muslims, not Arabs.
They were Torah. They were Torah-observing Christians, which is why they knew Hebrew, which is why they used the... They didn't use the Greek alphabet. They didn't use the Greek language.
No, they used Hebrew.
They used Hebrew because they were Torah-observant, and which is what made them followers of the way.
Yeah. Correct.
Everything Muhammad says scientifically is just utter and complete nonsense. He has the sun revolving around the earth in a race with the moon. He has the moon as a mini sun that was effaced by an angel's wing so that it has less light than the sun. He thinks it actually generates light as opposed to reflects it.
But tragically, no Muslim will believe what you're telling, although it is written in their own books.
And it's absolutely clear. There's no way to disagree with it. It's right there. How many different creation accounts are there in the Quran?
From water, from mud, from spirit, from ovum. I mean, literally six.
And also from coagulated blood.
Correct. Which is the first one of the revelation. Coagulated blood.
Coagulated blood, yeah. So from dead blood, humankind was created as opposed to blood, you know.
In fact, in English they call it a clot.
Yeah, a clot. Yeah, every one of his creation accounts, including his explanation that people are different colors because Allah took stinking slime from different places around the world, and then the slime was different colors.
Yes.
I mean, it is so stupid that you have to be a complete ignoramus to be a Muslim. And here's this idiot in Australia who is educated and literate, and he's believing that this malarkey is reasonable.
But he's not the only one.
No, of course not. There's a billion, 500 million of them.
Tens of thousands of educated Europeans and Americans are joining this madness.
Right. So twisted. And it's hard for people to imagine that anyone in their right mind would follow the spiritual advice of a man who was a pedophile, who was a rapist, who was a mass murderer, who was a slave trader, who kidnapped for ransom, who admitted that he was a liar, who admitted that he was demon-possessed, who was a sexual pervert. And you're going to believe that that's the guy that God chose to reveal himself to humankind when everything he said was a lie? And you're not smart enough to figure it out?
They're not smarter. They really are not smart.
No.
Yeah, but stupid. Our leaders are not better, by the way. I mean, our leaders are not better, really.
Lindsey Graham, you know, in announcing he's going to run for president, said that his presidency will be defined by America's military prowess over radical Islam. I mean, yeah. Didn't he learn anything? Every time we've attacked Islam, what did we do? Didn't we make a bad situation worse?
No, not only this, but you lost. Every single time America lost.
Of course. We made a bad situation worse.
France lost, England lost. Right. Anybody who went against Islam militarily lost.
Right, because you can't fight a religion, by particularly a religion that's devoted to criminality, a religion that is literally conceived in death.
Correct.
When you fight them, when you bomb them, you play right into their hands. You give them what they want, which they want to die as martyrs in this religion. All you do is exacerbate the problem when you fight this religion with bullets and bombs. It's like throwing gasoline on a fire and thinking you're going to put it out.
You need to put water on it.
Yes. And water, in this case, is words. You need people who will take the time to learn the truth. It's not hard to find. Read IQ Al-Rasul is lifting the veil. Yeah.
But that is the water.
Yeah, he has provided all of that free for you. Go to Al-Rasul is lifting the veil website, and you will find everything that you need to know, topically arranged for you on every subject, based strictly on what the Quran and Hadith said. Or you can go to prophetofdoom.net, and you can read the entirety of what we know about Muhammad and the creation of Islam for free there. It doesn't take long to educate yourself.
3 hours, by the way. Maximum 3 hours.
Yeah. Or don't even pay attention to us. Just go read the first 9 surahs of the Quran. That's all you need to know.
3 hours. Maximum.
Yeah. And it's not that we don't want you to read the rest of the Quran. It's just that the rest of the Quran is primarily the never-ending argument. It's Muhammad ticked off at his neighbors. His neighbors saying, you're nothing but a fraud. You're demon-possessed. You're a con man. You're a pervert. You're just a disgusting liar. Those who knew him best defined him accurately. And Muhammad's response was, my God's going to get you. And the rest of the surahs, they just say that over and over and over again. So all you really have to do is read the first 9, and you'll understand Islam. And of course,
tragically, not many people are doing that.
No, that is the great sadness in all of this is how few people are willing to become aware. Now, Yahweh's favorite term, his favorite verb in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is shamar. It means to observe. It means to closely examine and carefully consider. Unless you're willing to do what we've done and closely examine and carefully consider, you can't make an intelligent conclusion. You can't be judgmental. You can't exercise good judgment. You've got to know before you can understand. And most people don't even bother to observe. They don't know. They're just, well, the word is ignorant.
This is why I say that the four horsemen of the apocalypse of Islam is called knowledge, 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 and knowledge.
Yeah.
The minute you know Islam, you cannot possibly, you cannot, it is impossible to agree with it. It's impossible.
Yeah. You know, I think that if you're a logical person, if you like reason, if you like to make connections, there is something that is even more lethal to Islam than knowledge. And that's understanding. That is what makes you so unique, is that you understand Islam. You understand that it's a criminal enterprise. You understand that it's a death cult, that it is a terrorist manifesto, that Muhammad was the most vile individual who ever lived, and there is no God named Allah, that Muhammad created Allah as his alter ego to justify his heinous behavior. That's it. That's transitioning from knowledge to understanding based upon making the connections between what the Quran says and what Muhammad did.
As people say, connecting the dots, and there aren't many dots to connect. Actually, there aren't many.
No, for me it was pretty simple. I decided that that since the Quran is a jumbled mess, it has no context and no chronology. I mean, literally, a jumbled mess. It's the product of a chaotic mind. That the only way I'd have a chance of understanding Islam was to reorder the Quran chronologically and then to set it in the context of Muhammad's life. And so I use the two, there's only two, chronological hadith collections that explain what Muhammad did and when he did it. And one's called the Tariq, which is Tabati's collection of hadith. The other one is the Sirah, which is Ishaq's collection of hadith. And I use the two of them, those two chronological presentations of everything we know about Muhammad, to reorder the Quran chronologically so I could set it into the context of Muhammad's life, because I have found that context is the mother's milk of understanding. And oh my God, when you do that.
Your book is a monumental effort. It really is. I'm not saying it. I've always said it behind your back to people who are in academia. I even bought six of them to give it to people who are in academia, but not a single one of them came back to me and said, I read it. Not one.
Yeah, it's impossible to read that book and not have your life transformed.
Yeah, it is literally impossible.
It's impossible to read that book and not understand. Not only will you know what Islam is, you'll understand it.
I can't understand how you were able to have so much humor in it.
I mean it honestly.
I couldn't stop laughing many, many times reading the comments you made were so humorous, but so devastating to Islam.
Yeah, you know, it was funny, IQ. I put in humor in it because I was actually working on behalf of a very funny individual, an individual that has a real sense of humor. I've come to know him, and his name is Yahweh, and he was the one that asked me to do it. So he has a real sense of humor, and so I couldn't help but see the humor in it. Well, I guess my favorite is that the creation account where the kid was wanting to hear about the 18th variation of creation, but his camel disappeared. The only thing we know for sure is the camel's gone. The whole thing, you've got to laugh. It's so serious. I enjoy about you, IQ, is that your judgment. You're not politically correct. You exercise good judgment. Now, in Prophet of Doom, the single most common criticism I get from people in Prophet of Doom is that why are you so judgmental? I mean, you're so snarky and so sarcastic that it hurts your credibility as a scholar.
I said, but you are a scholar.
But I said, you know, that is who I am.
Exactly.
I am judgmental. I think there's something fundamentally wrong about pedophilia. I'm judgmental. I think that mass murder and decapitation are wrong. I think lying about God is wrong. I think that rape is wrong. So, yeah, I'm damn judgmental when it comes to Islam and to Muhammad. And I'm going to use sarcasm and every other tool in the chest to mock this disgusting individual. And, you know, if you don't like it, don't read the damn book. But I'm incapable of presenting information that's this despicable without being judgmental and pejorative. I'm going to criticize it. It's one of the things that you do. Let's call it what it is. Why should we pretend to show respect for such a disreputable individual in religion?
I've always said, since Islam and Muhammad are beneath contempt, it is impossible to insult them.
I think so, too.
That's it. That's the bottom line. They don't like it. Lump it.
Yeah, don't. You know, one of the reasons that terrorism still is pervasive, one of the reasons that there's still hundreds and thousands of little girls that are kidnapped and gang raped every day, there's a reason that hundreds of millions of little girls are sexually mutilated by their Muslim parents, is because we tolerate Islam. Because there's too damn few people that are willing to tell the truth about the religion.
And the worst criminals in this are the feminists in Europe and America. The worst criminals.
Yeah.
The female leaders in Europe and America, including Clinton, Hillary Clinton, they are the criminals.
Yeah.
Because they haven't addressed the fact that there are 750 million females in Islam who are treated one little step higher than domestic animals. That's it.
Yeah. Stockholm syndrome. Yeah. And in Islam, one of the planks of Islam that enabled Muhammad to perpetrate Islam is he told Muslim men that women are their sex slaves. That a woman has no rights whatsoever, that a man can use them and discard them and do whatever they want to them, that a woman exists solely for the pleasure of men, full stop. They have no responsibility to them. They can beat them, they can starve them, they can rape them. And if a woman is raped in Islam, who suffers the penalty? The perpetrator or victim?
The victim.
Yeah. That's how perverted this religion is.
Well, it's very interesting that Muhammad in his Quran says that the men are the breadwinners of women.
Mm. Yeah.
When Muhammad, throughout his life, it was Khadija who was the breadwinner.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Throughout his life.
Yeah.
She was the one who kept him alive.
Yeah. People don't become as perverted as Muhammad unless they have deep insecurities. They're covering, or they're masking over horrid personal failures. And so Muhammad had demons that possessed him. And he, so much of Islam, you know, was him lashing out at the women who had tormented him. So he torments women through his religion.
Okay.
He was never able to earn a living, and those around him were. So he simply steals what productive people have.
That's why Islam is a parasitic entity.
Right. He was never able to conceive life. And so what does he do? He takes life.
Correct. Look, they come to Europe. They come to America. The Europeans give them shelter, they give them education, they give them everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they literally suck the blood of these nations. They suck the blood, the life blood of these nations.
Right. They do.
That's parasites.
Yeah. But has Islam ever been anything other than parasitic? Has it ever contributed anything?
Never.
Or is it the ultimate, most corrosive, most malignant thing that man has ever conceived, and that everything it touches, it destroys?
Well, it's carcinogenic, they call it. Carcinogenic.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yes, it is. It destroys everything that it touches. Always has.
Look at
the Islamic world. The worst place, the least free, least educated, least inventive.
Places. This is why 57 Muslims in majority states with 1.5 billion people are the least productive, least inventive, least creative in human history.
Yes. But they're also the most deadly and the most destructive and the most prone to terrorism. All because Muhammad was all of those things. And all Islam is, it is nothing more than a reflection of Muhammad. The most perverted, the most repulsive, the most vile and vicious man who ever lived. This religion ought to be outlawed as a criminal enterprise and quarantined. Thank you, IQ.